हरिः ॐ सहना भवतु सहनौ भुनक्तु सह वीर्यं करवावहै तेजस्विनावधीतमस्तुमविद्विषावहन्तिः ॐ जय श्रीकृष्ण चैतन्य प्रभु नित्यानन्द श्री अद्वैत गदाधर शिव सरिगौर भक्तवृन्द हरे कृष्ण 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 हरे 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 राम 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 हरे हरे
ओके पेज 16 Chapter 74. Srila Jiva Goswami comments, "The vessels were made of gold. One should not doubt this." Kila. Right? It's not that they were like gold, what do you call it, plated or just gold colors. They were just gold. Right? Brahma and Shiva were the chief devatas present. Saganaha refers to Garuda and other Vaikuntha associates. The sages were Atmaramas like the Kumaras. The birds were the sons of Garuda. Yudhishthira is called the son of Pandu because as his son he spread Pandu's fame. And he was also doing this yajna because Pandu had asked that it be done. They did not consider the sacrifice astonishing since Yudhishthira was a devotee of Swayam Bhagavan Krishna. Right? Yes.
We know the reasons why Yudhishthira Maharaj did the Rajasuya sacrifice.
Right.
But why would Pandu ask him to do that?
In Mahabharata, it's explaining that it will then, you know, increase the glory of all of them. It'll give them all a better position, like that. So Mahabharata will only bring out the, you know, generally the cultural and those kind of aspects. But we see for Yudhishthira, it's because then he can worship Krishna. So as devotees of Krishna, it's just the best one because this one in specific means you have to worship the Supreme, you know, whoever is the Supreme in the assembly. So if it's Krishna's there, all these, Brahma, Shiva, all the Vaikuntha personalities are there, the great personalities from the heavenly planets, and they're all accepting that Krishna is being worshipped, then you pretty much establish Krishna as the Supreme Worshipable Object. Like that. Verses 17 to 29, Krishna receives the first worship. Srila Sukadeva Goswami continued, "On the day of extracting the soma juice, King Yudhishthira properly and very attentively worshipped the priests and the most exalted personalities of the assembly. The members of the assembly then pondered over who among them should be worshipped first. But since there were many personalities qualified for this honor, they were unable to decide. Finally, Sahadev spoke up." Because in that assembly, so many are there, and from any aspect you could say, Brahma could be the supreme, because he's the, you know, the head of the universe, the original person within the universe, you know, and from him is coming all the other devatas, including Shiva, like this. Or Shiva's the supreme because actually his position is, he's a potency that's higher than, he's not a jiva. And all that, he's actually Purusha and all that, and so, and he destroys, it's his wife who controls the whole thing. You could go on and, you know, like this, great sages, all these things. So, therefore, they couldn't quite figure it out. So then Sahadev spoke up. The BBT purport states, Srila Prabhupada writes, "Another important procedure is that the most exalted personality in the assembly of such a sacrificial ceremony is first offered worship. This particular ceremony is called Agra Puja. Agra means first, and Puja means worship. This Agra Puja is similar to the election of a president. In the sacrificial assembly, all the members were very exalted. Some proposed to elect one person as the perfect candidate for accepting Agra Puja, and others proposed someone else. As the great Acharya Jiva Goswami points out, text 15 of this chapter states that the members of the assembly were not astonished at the opulence of the sacrifice, since they knew that King Yudhishthira was a devotee of Lord Krishna. Still, Text 18 now states that the assembly could not select the most deserving candidate for being worshipped first. This indicates that many of the Brahmins present were not fully realized transcendentalists, but rather conventional Brahmanas uncertain of the supreme conclusion of the Vedic wisdom, right? They'd be very well situated in the Brahminical practices in that, and therefore very exalted and worshipable. But they hadn't come to the point of understanding about, you know, the Vaishnava position. So they didn't understand actually the position of Vishnu. Right?
Maharaj, even earlier it was being established that Vishnu is the supreme ruler. That particular pastime wherein I think it's Bhriga Rishi who goes.
Bhriga Rishi, yes, yes.
And then he kicks Vishnu on the chest.
Right, right.
And it was being established that Vishnu is the supreme. So again, now again, the same thing is being established.
Well, the point is we're saying it's. Is the same thing being established? Why does it need to be? It's like, how many times in a day do we need to remember that Krishna's God and we're not independent controllers and enjoyers? Yeah, so, you know, demigods have the same problem. So when we mean conventional, we mean conventional in the Vedic context of there's the Vaishnava position and then the Brahmins. We don't mean conventional just like an ordinary guy in the street, right? Mm-hmm. Like that. So that's why they're worshipable, but they weren't understanding the supreme position of Vishnu in this case. Similarly, Acharya Vishwanath comments that the undecided members of the assembly were the less intelligent ones and not such exalted personalities as Brahma, Shiva, and Dwaipayana Vyas, who thought, since today no one is asking our opinion, why should we say anything, right? You know, they want to talk, you know, the priests and that, let them talk. And then when they can't figure it out, then at some point they'll say something. You know, because one of the points of Niti is don't present something if no one is interested. Because then you just waste your time and it just argue over it and it puts yourself in a lesser position. Like that. You know, it's just not the way to do it. Okay. Furthermore, here is Sahadev, who is renowned for his sharp skill in analyzing all sorts of circumstances. Right? Sahadev is also a very expert astrologer. Right? Of the brothers, you know, they all have different areas that they're expert in. So he's expert in astrology and omens and all these kind of everything connected in that area. So that means he's analyzed things very, very nicely. Because the tradition, as we mentioned before, is that how do you choose, how would a teacher of Jyotish choose a student, a proper student? Right? Because it's a very elaborate and technical and mathematical subject with so many details that you have to consider everything at once. It's not just, oh, it's this and this. It's all the things at once, right? So how does he choose? Well, he steps outside of his cottage, you know, because cottages have sloped roofs. He takes an amlaki fruit and keeps the prospective student next to him. He takes the amlaki fruit, tosses it up to the top of the roof, and it'll land on the roof and then roll down and hit the ground. And when it hits the ground, he turns to the prospective student and says, how many times did that amlaki fruit make a complete 360-degree revolution? And if he was able to see that and count it, he is your student. And if he's not, then don't even bother. Right? So, in other words, Sahadev's good.
The same principle is being followed by some of the gurukuls in Maharashtra, wherein they check the chart of this child, and only then they admit him to the gurukul, not otherwise.
Okay. Mm. Yes. Oh, where are we?
Maharaj, is it the same system that all teacher can select their student?
I mean, that's your general kind of thing. When you're dealing with the aparavidya, you would. For the transcendental knowledge, basically, if somebody is interested in the transcendental subject matter, that's the qualification. Tadvidi pranipatena pariprasnena sevaya. If they have those three aspects, right, they're interested to learn, they make an endeavor to apply what they, you know, understand what they learn. And they try to apply what they learned. How good they are or not, then they're a qualified student. But when you're taking an aparavidya, it depends upon your material conditioned qualification. Like that. And so then you have that kind of testing. So if you have if you're teaching a material subject, then you may consider like that. Like that. But for the transcendental, then it's just that enthusiasm. So nowadays they spread it to everything that, you know, they say, but at the same time is one, when they do, then the quality of whatever's there goes way down. Or two is they only talk about it in social things, and when it comes to the occupational, then they make the most extreme designations. You know, like we said before, you either had a BA or you had a BSc or a B.Ed. That was it.
They didn't have the art.
Huh? No, that would all be in the science.
L-L-L-B.
It was all. Yeah, yeah, BCom. You could also say.
LLB.
No, that was BA.
Yeah, it was all part of BA. And when you go back like 50 years, they just had these few things. Everything fit into that. If it was scientific, it went into science. If it was any kind of, language or thoughts or anything like that, so your law, that went into the arts and things like this. That now it comes down is you don't even know what the letters mean. You know, it means that in architecture, we only do Bauhaus, but only Bauhaus that is like 1960 to 1963, and that's only what was in the eastern part of the western part of Europe, and that only within Germany, and that only within Berlin, and that only within from, 97th Street to 53rd. And that's your degree. And you're the world expert. Right? Yeah, so that's the problem. So even though everything's so liberal, but why is this all like that? It should just be all the same. Everyone just goes to school, learns some stuff, and then you do anything you want, right? No. Scientific things require that kind of intelligence. So the Vedic is no different, but it was a little simpler. You know, if you could do that, then you could learn the whole thing. And if you couldn't do that, then why bother? Go into something else where you excelled. Right? So that's the Vedic concept. Is where do you excel, that's where you go. Okay. Furthermore, here Sahadev, who is renowned for his sharp skill in analyzing all sorts of circumstances, he can help appoint the person who is to be worshipped first. Only if he somehow fails to speak or cannot understand the situation will we speak up, despite no one's having inquired from us. So that's what Brahma, Shiva, and Dwaipayana were thinking. Because they think he's there, he's part of the family, right? Because they're organizing the program. He's very good. So, they can't figure it out. And so naturally then Sahadev, he can work it out. Only if he doesn't work it out or speak up. I mean, not that he couldn't, but if he doesn't, somehow he's shy, because then only they'll speak once everybody is stumped, right? They don't know what to do. Having made up their minds in this way, the greatest personalities remain silent. This is how Vishwanath Chakravarti advises us to understand what occurred in the assembly. Otherwise, you'd say, how come he's speaking up? But he could. He's part of the family. They're putting on the program, so you can't complain about them. But he's renowned for being of sharp skill in analyzing circumstance. Otherwise, how does he have that skill in the astrological sciences? So he can see situations and analyze all that. Sahadev said, so now he does speak up. Certainly, it is Achyuta, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, and chief of the Yadavas, who deserves the highest position. In truth, he himself comprises all the demigods worshipped in sacrifice, along with such aspects of the worship as the sacred place, the time, and the paraphernalia. Right? So it's not even just he's the worshipful one, meaning as the person, but also the time, the circumstance, the place, the paraphernalia, the ritual, the mantras, everything. It's all him. This entire universe is founded upon him, as are the great sacrificial performances, with their sacred fires, oblations, and mantras. Shankhya and Yoga both aim towards him, the one without a second. O assembly members, that unborn Lord, relying solely on himself, creates, maintains, and destroys his cosmos by his personal energies, and thus the existence of this universe depends upon him alone. Right? So He's independent. He creates. He doesn't require anything. Brahma creates. He requires all that primary creation and potency that Krishna's already given. Right? He creates based on what's in the lotus. Right? So that's what Prabhupada says he's the engineer. We say it creates, but it's like the engineer will create things. But there, it's based on what they're given. They don't supply. Engineers don't supply anything. Right? So yeah. He creates many activities of this world, and thus, by his grace, the whole world endeavors for the ideals of religiosity, economic development, sense gratification, and liberation. Right? So you're discussing before is that how he entering everything, he makes it that people are interested in this Dharma, Artha, Kama, and Moksha. And that's what everybody's endeavoring for. It means every living entity. So why is that? Because that's his arrangement. So he is that potency in those things. He's that inspiration in that. So everybody is actually following him, following his order and worshiping him. Though, those who are working in an indirect way and don't know him, then it's not in as good a position as those who know that he's there. Therefore, we should give the highest honor to Krishna, the Supreme Lord. If we do so, we will be honoring all living beings and also our own selves. Right? Because he being everything and we all being part and parcel of him, therefore in worshiping him, then everybody is pleased, everyone's satisfied. Anyone who wishes the honor he gives to be reciprocated indefinitely should honor Krishna, right? You worship anyone else, it'll be reciprocated for a particular length of time. But with Krishna, it will be reciprocated eternally. They should worship, honor Krishna, the perfectly peaceful and perfectly complete soul of all beings, the Supreme Lord, who views nothing as separate from himself. Srila Prabhupada writes in Krishna book, Sahadev said, "Ladies and gentlemen, it is superfluous to speak about Krishna, because every one of you exalted personalities knows the Supreme Brahman, Lord Krishna, for whom there are no material differences between body and soul, between energy and energetic, or between one part of the body and another. Since everyone is part and parcel of Krishna, there is no qualitative difference between Krishna and all living entities. Everything is an emanation of Krishna's energies, the material and spiritual energies. Krishna's energies are like the heat and light of the fire. There's no difference between the quality of heat and light and the fire itself, right? They're non-different because they all go together. But you can still tell the difference. So when you have the fire, you have heat and light. So if you worship Krishna, then everybody else who they're worried, you know, should it be this one or that great sage or this demigod, they're already worshipped by worshipping Krishna. Because as the heat and light, you have the fire that's already accomplished. He should therefore be offered the first worship of this great sacrifice, and no one should disagree. Krishna is present as the Supersoul in every living being, and if we can satisfy him, then automatically every living being becomes satisfied. Right? So that's the flavor that he gives. So he's just making that point. So he was very adamant about it. He made a very strong presentation. He gave it very clearly. And he pointed out, you all know who he is. So naturally there shouldn't be any like that. Sukadeva Goswami continued. Having said this, Sahadev, who understood Lord Krishna's powers, fell silent. And having heard his words, all the saintly persons present congratulated him, exclaiming, excellent, excellent. Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur writes, O Krishna, you are eager to wash the feet of all the people assembled in my palace. But the eager kings are inviting you in order to wash your feet, as you are worthy of worship by all, including Brahma and Shiva. Please quickly go there. Messengers informed Krishna in this way and brought him, and then Yudhishthira worshipped him elaborately. Krishna, though protesting this worship, being irritated in an affectionate way, was attractive to all. So even his, how he's trying to avoid the worship, you know, but at the same time going along because of the affection, then, you know, everyone found very attractive because it's just the relationship that's attractive, right? The technical points are only attractive means if they're done very well, someone has a good consciousness, someone has a good focus, someone, all these different things, that's what makes it attractive, right? If somebody does something very expertly, but the mood is not very nice, or that it's not attractive. We take it that it's the externals that are attractive, but they never actually are. Because one person does something, and some people will go, that's great. Someone else will go, that's terrible. And why? It'll be based on the mood that they are perceiving. Right? Does that make sense? Yeah. So that's always going to be there. So even you can say no, but there's some people that just appreciate the technical. But the point is why do they appreciate the technical? Because of the focus and intelligence and knowledge, you know, and endeavor required to do that. You know what I'm saying? So it's still about qualities. Yeah?
Lord,
yes.
Krishna's duty in the assembly is he was washing the feet of everyone who...
He was taking the shoes. So that may mean that in the process, after taking their shoes, because they've come from wherever they've come, and they're going for a sacrifice, he may be washing their feet. But here it's not saying that, because some that kind of detail you have to get from Mahabharata.
I think it is explained much.
Maybe coming up, like that, because they all had different duties. So Krishna's was arranging the shoes.
Well, it says in the previous paragraph that, O Krishna, you were eager to wash the feet of all the people assembled in my palace.
Yeah, but whether he's doing it or not, just because you're eager doesn't mean you, yeah. You know, like the kid is eager to eat that bucket of halva, but whether he actually is, that's another thing. So it may be. So the point is since he says he's eager, he's not just saying that to say it. So then he's happy. All these personalities come, he takes the shoes, he washes their feet, and like that, then that's fine. Because they're all taking whatever part they're playing. Just like we said, then Nakula, after having taken the shoes and that, then he receives them. You know, he may have been receiving them, taking to wear the shoes, and taking up the Sahadev. Sahadev sits them. Right? Bhima, he's taking care of the cooking, all the food for everybody. Vidura is taking care of, you know, all the things that are necessary for the sacrifice. And that's a very, very important thing when it comes to sacrifice. Like I can remember of all the installations we've done over the last, you know, since the 80s, that one stands out where they had one person who he took care of whatever we needed. And he was very expert at that. And that stood out as the best arranged installation we've ever been able to do because of that one point. So therefore, then Vidura being able to do that, that's a very, very important thing to all the priests. Because the worst thing is that you need something and then, oh yeah, we'll talk to this. Because managers generally tend to take details as not important, right? You know, God's only, isn't that the saying? God's only in the big, big work, right? Isn't that the saying? Yeah, so the point of details, then that's for anybody can do details and only... The managers can do the big, you know, the vision, the this, the that, and everybody can do details, right? Isn't that the way it goes? Yeah. Yeah. So that's the whole idea is that detail is what they're doing. They're kings. They take one thing. You know, we can learn from that. You know, much of the time nowadays, one guy tries to control everything. And if he's able to do it, great. But generally you see those who have the best programs, best festivals, is someone oversees that it's all going, but the actual practical management of each aspect is given to a responsible person. And then they take care of it. And then the manager oversees that it's all going on and facilitates that. Does that make sense? So we see is that's how it's done. You know, you have five persons that each one of them could be the emperor of the world, but they're taking something like that. Shoes, you know, sitting guests, cooking. You know, like that. That's what they're doing. Yeah. Yeah. So that kind of detail, that secondary detail, that will be, you'll find that in Mahabharata. But the important aspect of how it's all connected to Krishna and not, and so they just give indication, you know, where something's coming in and what's the level. So why mention about the utensils being gold and the arrangements being so elaborate? Because then that's seen in connection with Krishna, because then everybody won't say it's such an amazing thing, because Yudhishthira Maharaj is a devotee of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, so why wouldn't it be happening, right? But we see, I'm not sure if it's Mahabharata or where it is, that you have that, there was that, what was it called? What are those things called? Mongoose. Half his body was like shiny gold, and the other half was regular mongoose color. And whenever some king would do a big sacrifice, after the sacrifice had finished, he would come into this assembly and roll around on the dust there. You know? And when asked, why are you doing this? He said, because then he mentioned some, you know, big, big yajna that everybody knew was like the yajna. That somehow or another, he rolled in the dust there, and the side that he rolled on, his whole body turned gold. And the other side stayed away. So he goes to every yajna trying to get the other side gold. And so then that establishes whether it was really elaborate or not. Right? Yeah. No? Yeah. So then you see is that people do make judgments on how big it is, how amazing it is, how this and that. And that's Mahabharata level stuff. You know, which is the best of the material platform. But here in Bhagavatam, then it'll be pointing out is what's actually the Krishna conscious connection of that. Why that's good? Because it's connected to Krishna, of course it'll be amazing. It'll be this and that. Because they have faith. They know Krishna is... wherever there's Krishna, there's Lakshmi. So if there's lots of money, it's because there's Krishna consciousness. Not, oh, they're spending all this money here, but we could be doing a farm project over there, and we could be able to fix all these temples that are falling apart over here, and why we're spending all that money here. That's because they're Krishna conscious, and so therefore there's money, and all these other places are falling apart because they're not Krishna conscious. It's simple, according to Bhagavatam. Like that. You know, Mahabharata may have another idea. You know what I'm saying? But that's the whole point. It just brings it to the front that it's about Krishna, you know, and now the worship, then that's being done according, you know, Krishna. And so like that, then how Sahadev speaks, how Yudhishthira deals, Krishna's mood, how he reciprocates with his devotees, that's what's discussed. The details of the yajna, it's not really being discussed.
Like that. And when you find that even the services that the four brothers take and Krishna takes are very, very humble in a sense.
The services they take are very humble. Humble in what aspect?
Because not a king or even like today we find nobody wants to execute these services as, you know.
No one wants to execute these services. And how well do programs go these days?
Yeah, that's
you see, Manu says, a program where everyone's invited, a Brahmin should not go to. That's the rule. You know, it's just like somebody's, you know, relative dies and then they want to have prasad for everybody in Mayapur. Mm-hmm. According to the rules, Brahmins shouldn't go to those programs. Because when you go there, what happens? Chaos. Nobody knows, it's chaos. Nobody knows what's happening, you know, where you should sit. Then you go to sit here, other people, you know, come in and this and that. The serving doesn't happen. All these things don't happen. So that's the whole thing is that, as we mentioned before, it is the point is this, it's the detail where you tell how conscious, how expert someone is. Not the big, big, you know, 20-year plan and this and that. Someone who can do a 20-year plan and do detail, now you have a manager. But if they can only sit and do 20-year plans and they can't, you know, how you say? Manage their way out of a wet paper bag with both ends open, then, yeah, it's a problem. That's a new one, right? I always heard it as, it's manage their way out of a wet paper bag. That means you put them in, you close it, you know, roll it up like you do a lunch bag, but you can't get out. Someone the other day mentioned about with both ends open, and I was, wow, no, that's, yeah. So... That's the thing is that if, what happens if you lose this king's shoes? Or that king, you don't bring him his shoes, you bring his minister's shoes. Or worse, let's say you bring his, another, his, an enemy king's shoes. Yeah, his wife's shoes. Are you kidding? You know, it's that decoration for his big toe, you know, like that. Okay, that's another. Big toes look good, wear the shoes, yeah. You know, unless, of course, he's a small king and you bring the big king's shoes that are all, like, with diamonds and that. Okay, cool, yeah. You know, and then the other guy comes along, just gets the flip-flops, you know. Yeah, huh? Yeah, the old, yeah. The old. So you can start wars. You sit them down in the wrong place. You start wars. You don't greet them properly. They just turn around and walk out. So that's the problem in the modern day. Things that are so important, then we'll all say, oh, that's not a big thing. That's not for me. You know, it's like, you know, you sit there and arrange the program. You know, you make the sit and have meetings, arrange the festival and that, but those people aren't there executing it. And so it's chaos. Right? Because they consider anyone could do that. But anyone can't do that. That's the whole thing. It means those who are real managers, they go in and do it themselves. Now, if they have someone that they trust can do it, they do it. Because that's what Prabhupada said. Temple president means all the duties in the temple are yours. And it's your responsibility to get them done. Because once Prabhupada said, why isn't this being done? And Prabhupada said, oh, this devotee didn't do it. You know, so what can I do? Prabhupada said, no, it's your duty. They don't wash the pots. You have to wash the pots. You can't say I'm the president, I don't wash pots. No, you're supposed to wash the pots, take out the garbage, clean the floor, do the puja, wake everybody up in the morning, you know, see to everything like that, do all the accounts. You're supposed to do everything. That's what it means to be temple president. Now, if you're a good manager, you can find people to do all those responsibilities, and you see, follow up and see that they're doing it. But if they don't do it, you're supposed to do it. Not, oh, they're not here, and I'm in a meeting, and that kind of stuff. That's not a manager. Actually, really, it's not. You know what I'm saying? Because if that is, then, you know, guys like Nero would be the world's best managers. You know? I mean, what has he got to do with the fire, you know? You know, he's got important things to do, like play violin. Right? No? Yes.
My experience is that while you describe this, not focusing on details and doing things nicely, it goes hand in hand with the idea that we should like, give everybody a space and just, it's all voluntary, so anybody can do it as he likes. You know,
yeah, no, but this is, but all these things are just as you make everything equal, then everything does become equal. And so everything's just really ordinary, really blasé, nothing special. No, it is, but Bitcoin's because we haven't grown up and experienced these things. Because the average person, does he do anything with, he has his house, but the rules governing the house, does he have anything to do with? How big your house can be, how much of the land it can take up, how many stories it can be, what it can be made out of, what your fences can be, how high they can be. He has anything to do with those rules? No. How about the price of electricity? You know, or arranging the electricity, or water, or sewage, or the rules on parking, who can park where, anything like that. What about education? No, they just send their kids to the state school, like that, and so they go through that, and then they grow up and they go get a job. And is the job, is they're defining it? No. Whoever runs the company in that, they define it. You understand? So at what point are they ever actually organizing anything? You know what I'm saying? Now they can be very responsible and do all the things nicely and do that, you know, pay their taxes and do all the things and take care of everybody. And that, because of that, now you can teach that person. Right? But at the same time, all those individuals that we mentioned, that ordinary position, how many things to do with government and education and management and society and the world and the universe do they have an opinion on? Absolutely everything. So now if you make that person, you know, in charge, he has an opinion on everything. That's God-given. But whether he can it work in those areas, that's another thing. You know what I'm saying? That's why the Varnashram system is there. Because you only require one manager to manage so many people. You know? But this idea that everybody's the manager, everyone has a say, that can work. I've heard of one tribe, I think in Brazil, that that's how it worked. There may be more, but you know, when I've heard of historically, one tribe of like a you know, 100 and some odd people, where everything was consensus, like that. But I don't know. You don't hear much about them these days, right? And I think Russia at one point, you know, everything was consensus. 2,000-something people had to have a unanimous vote on something because of the communistic ideal of equal and everything like that. How well did that work out for them? Right? You know, they had to switch into something where someone actually takes a decision. You understand? So that's the whole point, is that it has its place. But in the Vedic system, that's there on the village level amongst the common people. They in their village, then they work things out together. And then their senior people amongst them work out bigger things. But it all has to be something because they all live there together. Everyone knows each other. It's kind of got to work. Right? And that representation of all those people and their needs goes up the chain. Right? You know, every village has a head. 10 villages, you know, 10 heads, then one of them is the head. And of those 10, then one is the head, one of the 10, like this, how far it needs to go and get till it gets to the capital. So then the whole country is represented in that assembly. Right? Like that. And that's all democratic. But then, at that point, then they represent everything to the king and the ministers. And since the king and the ministers are the ones that will get things done, not any of those other people, then they will make the decision, they'll get it done. But it's not that anyone from that lower house can't be a member of that higher house. They just have to have the qualification. It's not a matter of, oh, everyone's equal. It's a matter of who can do the job does the job. Otherwise, everyone's equal. Okay, who's cooking lunch? You know, because we're all equal. Yeah, well, why not him? You know? Yeah, you know, I mean, if he can handle that he's always picking his nose, then, you know, we're good. You know? You know what I'm saying? So these philosophies, they're very nice for situations where you require an equal aspect. But in areas where you need someone with qualification, they absolutely fall apart. You know what I'm saying? Because if it's just based on they want, how many 12-year-olds want to drive a car? Right? Every one of them, right? So are they allowed to drive the car? Why not? They want to. Why is it only because, you're bigger and older that you get to drive the car? Right? Adults don't do stupid stuff? Right? You know? But does that make sense? So why is it that's there? So if we're being equal, they should be able to drive because they want. If it's all about who wants, then let them drive. But we don't. You have to be qualified. You know what I'm saying? And in so many countries, you hear about to get a license is super difficult. You fail 2, 3, 4, some places 5 times. It means if you get your pass on the 5th time, it's considered normal. Like that. When I grew up, is you always passed on the 1st time. So either the standard was very low or people were better. I don't know.
There was no traffic.
Yeah, that's true. There was much less traffic, wasn't there?
It was very easy to park.
Yeah, yeah. That's true. Yeah, now there's so many more cars. Yeah, yeah. So, yeah, traffic jam then meant everything slowed down, not it stopped and you could put out your lunch, basket and have a snack and, you know, and, like that. Yeah. You know, so strict, and so, you know, get into universities, get into this job, that job, it's so difficult. Like somebody was just telling me the other day, these guys that are in these top levels of the corporate world, not the CEO guys, the ones just below them, like that, if they lose a job, it takes 6 to 9 months to find a new one.
Sometimes more than that.
Yeah, it takes so long because it's so rare. It means how many people are there and the specific qualifications they want. It takes so long. You know, well, if you're just, you know, doing, the lower it goes down, the easier it is to find a job. You know, it's like that. So that's the whole thing, is that we talk one thing, but then in reality, something else is going on. You know what I'm saying? So that's the difficulty. So, yeah. So the point here is that the Bhagavatam is pointing out the connection to Krishna. That's the most important. The secondary, because that is what everybody is universal. Everybody can relate to that. Now the details of this yajna and all that, only people who are ritualistic can relate to it. So to describe all that, it's not going to be inspiring for everybody. Right? But if you're talking about the Krishna conscious element, everybody can be inspired. Because that's the universal, that's what deals with the soul. So, therefore, that's why it'll bring out that aspect the most. And more detail than that, that's why Mahabharata and the other literatures are there, because to know those things and work, that's necessary in the society, but it always must be understood that's secondary. Otherwise, we will take that secondary, because it takes more material qualification, we'll take it as a higher principle than the devotion. Like, this guy's a chartered accountant. He should be the temple president, not this other guy who's a great devotee, a great sadhaka. Everyone loves him. Everyone, you know, likes his example and all that. He shouldn't be, because, you know, he didn't even finish high school. But this guy, you know, he did university and he's a chartered accountant. So he's the qualified man, because we have to have professionals, you know, to represent our society. And so then that's the problem. Now, when it comes to accounts, yes, he does it. This other guy, he may not do a good job. But that's the point. He's just doing accounts. The other guy runs the temple. Does that make sense? Now, if you can do both, great. But what I'm talking on is this idea that by being professional, that's what's going to make everything work. No, it's by being devotion, it'll make it work. Otherwise, all these Brahmins that are there, they're all expert. Otherwise, why'd Yudhishthira invite them? You're doing a Rajasuya, you know, like that. So, we're doing this Rajasuya, so they have to be the most qualified. And you're inviting all the demigods and that. They know all these things. Varuna's not there, right? He already did this. So, you know, right? Yeah. So, it has to be good. But because them being expert at all that, they can't figure out who the Supreme is. So that's another indication Bhagavatam's showing. It's not about material qualification. Even though they are Brahmins. Of Brahmins, they're very excellent Brahmins. And of very excellent, they're respected in, you know, many of them in the universe. And still they can't figure out who's the Supreme. So material qualification has its limit to a material application. But to spiritual, that's purely based on spiritual qualification. It has nothing to do with material. The two are not connected. Right? You can engage the material, but it's not connected. That because you're good at one, therefore you're good at the other. Does that make sense? Yeah. Okay. Okay. Sukadeva Goswami continued, "The king was delighted to hear this pronouncement of the Brahmanas, from which he understood the mood of the entire assembly. Overwhelmed with love, he fully worshipped Lord Krishna, the master of the senses. After bathing Lord Krishna's feet, Maharaj Yudhishthira joyfully sprinkled the water on his own head and then upon the heads of his wife, brothers, other family members, and ministers. That water purifies the whole world. As he honored the Lord with presentations of yellow silken garments and precious jeweled ornaments, the king's tear-filled eyes prevented him from looking directly at the Lord. When they saw Lord Krishna thus honored, nearly all who were present joined their palms reverentially, exclaiming, 'Obeisances to you, all victory to you,' and then bowed down to him. Flowers rained down from above." Yeah, so he was very delighted to hear the pronouncement of the Brahmins. I mean, Sahadev made the point, and everybody understood. And so therefore, because the Brahmins are deciding, because they're running the ritual, right? Yudhishthira Maharaj is their disciple in this yajna. So all these, the priests and that, they have to make the decision and give the advice. But they couldn't come to a conclusion. When Sahadev made the point, they understood. Then they said, this is what's to be done. They informed the king. And then they informed Krishna, like this. Verses 30 to 37, right? Because they could see is that here, the mood of the entire assembly. Now, there's a few people who are not, which we're going to see in the next verse. But basically, all those who mattered, then they supported. And those who didn't, then we'll find out what happens. Verses 30 to 37, Shishupal criticizes the Lord. Sukadeva Goswami continued, the intolerant son of Dhammaghosa became infuriated upon hearing the glorification of Lord Krishna's transcendental qualities. He stood up from his seat and angrily waving his arms, fearlessly spoke to the entire assembly the following harsh words against the Supreme Lord. Right, so fearlessly means, you know, he's totally, you know, not Krishna conscious here. You know, very proud, so much ignorance that he's very confident that what he's saying is correct. Right? The BBT purport states, Srila Prabhupada writes, in that meeting, King Shishupal was also present. He was an avowed enemy of Krishna for many reasons, especially because of Krishna's having stolen Rukmini from the marriage ceremony. Because yeah, he was supposed to marry her, so he's definitely not going to be pleased, right? Therefore, he could not tolerate such honor to Krishna and glorification of his qualities. Instead of being happy to hear the glories of the Lord, he became very angry. Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti mentions that the reason Shishupal did not object when Sahadev proposed Krishna for the Agra Puja is that Shishupal wanted to ruin King Yudhishthira's sacrifice. Right? Because now he can see where it's going. He wants to ruin that. Because he doesn't like Krishna. They're supporters of Krishna. Therefore, he'll ruin the sacrifice. Because as we'll see, there comes up a point is that people can't... There's something that was there. Once they're in there, they can't leave the sacrifice. And if they do, it'll ruin the sacrifice. So he was planning to ruin the sacrifice. He'll make all these insults to Krishna and then walk out with his people. And in this way, then the sacrifice is ruined and like this.
The sacrifice is stopped like that means Maharaj Yudhishthira cannot be the emperor of the world.
That's there. But, you know, what's the reason that he, you know, if it's so he doesn't become emperor because Krishna's involved or because they're devotees or all of that, you know, like that. Because there's a good chance that Shishupal was friendly with Jarasandha.
Yes.
So he probably didn't appreciate that outcome, you know. You know, and also Rukmi, you know, and he got killed. And, you know, they were all friends. All his friends, they're all being killed.
Yes.
Right, you know, starting off with Kamsa and all his people. And now it's worked back to Jarasandha and like that.
Waiting for an auspicious time to occur so he can do the inauspiciousness and ruin everything.
He wants an auspicious time to... That means
yeah.
He wants an auspicious time that his trying to ruin
yeah.
Will be fruitful.
Basically at the point where it will be generated most inauspiciousness. He could have insulted right in the beginning itself and it would have not created that much trouble. But if he insults him at the point like when the Yajna thing is there, and then it will create like much more chaos and much more insult and like ruin
Uh-oh.
The whole thing.
Oh, okay. That's how you planned it.
I'm guessing.
Oh, okay.
Because one devotee told me that in his college, there was one one-eyed medical student, like medical college. This boy used to stand at the gate of the college when the exams were there and greet everybody. Well, it creates inauspiciousness to see a one-eyed person when you go for success, task which requires success.
Uh-huh.
So, mentality.
Okay. And then for the next exam, what happened? Probably they had him tied up in a basement somewhere, yeah. That's
no, he lost his second eye.
Yeah. Yes. Okay. If Shishupal had argued earlier against Lord Krishna receiving the first worship and another person had been selected, the sacrifice would have then proceeded normally. Therefore, Shishupal allowed Krishna to be selected, waited until the worship was over, and then spoke up, hoping in this way to demonstrate that the sacrifice was now spoiled. Right, because point is now you've worshipped him, he's the wrong person, now your sacrifice is spoiled. Right? Thus, he would ruin the endeavor of Maharaj Yudhishthir. In this regard, the Acharya quotes the following Smriti reference: Apujya yatra pujyante pujyana cha vyati krama. In the place where those who are not to be worshipped are worshipped, there is offense to those who are actually worshipable. Right. So his point is Krishna's not worshipable. Him being worshipped in front of all these persons that are worthy of worship, you know, like Brahma, Shiva, the demigods, and Vyasadeva, and that, then it's an offense. So therefore, then that would, in his mind, that he's pointing out that the sacrifice is ruined, though in actuality it's not. But that's the way he's thinking. There's also the following statement: Prati badnati hi shreya puja vyatikrama. Improperly understanding who is to be worshipped and who is not to be worshipped will impede one's progress in life. Right? Because that's the first thing that Manu explains is respect. When he starts talking about the training of the brahmachari, that's the first thing he discusses is respect. Who's to be respected? What's the order of respect? The hierarchy? Like that. Because understanding that, then everything can proceed. Then he gets into the knowledge and dealing with that. Shishupal said, the statement of the Vedas that time is the unavoidable controller of all has indeed proven true, since the intelligence of wise elders has now been diverted by the words of a mere boy, meaning Sahadev. Right? O leaders of the assembly, you know best who is a fit candidate for being honored. Therefore, you should not heed the words of a child when he claims that Krishna deserves to be worshipped. How can you pass over the most exalted members of this assembly, topmost sages dedicated to the absolute truth, endowed with powers of austerity, divine insight and strict adherence to severe vows, sanctified by knowledge and worshipped even by the rulers of the universe? Right, so it's not that he doesn't have faith in the Vedic version. He doesn't have the faith in the conclusion of the Vedas, which is worship of Krishna. But as far as the karma goes, and that you perform these, you get the good result, and he wants that because he's an enjoyer, then that he's very fixed in. Otherwise, why is he such a prominent personality? Right. How does this cowherd boy, the disgrace of his family, deserve your worship any more than a crow deserves to eat the sacred Purudasa rice cake? Right? Because there's the special cakes that are made that are offered into the sacrifice. Like that. They're made there at the yajna. So we're thinking, oh, these yajnas, you know, it took 40 minutes. It's so long, so ritualistic. They actually sit there, the Brahmins, and cook the offerings to the fire. On the fire. So they've made it, done all the different things. Then they bring the different, I think these are made from barley, some other things. They're cooked and they're made into these like pancakes, and they're cooked on the fire. And all these different things are there. Then those are then offered into the fire at the sacrifice. So, you know, what the Acharyas have given us, we're good. Like that. This is simple. We may say, oh, this is so ritualistic. No, this is simple. Like that.
Some rice cake has been offered, but even in other yajnas we find that out of rice, you know, and rice and milk, you know, the liquid, the kheer that is being performed, that is being offered. So what is the importance of rice in offering to the yajna?
What is the importance of rice in the offering? Yeah. It's one of the main grains. So rice, what do you call it? Barley, sesame, these are all important. They're all of the nine grains. So, you know, rice is always the, you know, standard what you eat things with. Like that. No? Means you see in the where it's more the Brahminical cultures in India, then rice is the basis. And as you bring in, you know, more you know, like the Kshatriya and like this, then you bring in the wheat and other things like that. Like Punjabis, they eat, if you're eating white rice, you're sick. You know, you don't eat white rice unless you're sick. While like Bengal, South India, Kashmir, which are all predominantly the Brahminical cultures, then, you know, you always eat rice, you know, like that. You know. Chapati, these are snacks. They're not a meal, right? Or something. You know, so it's one of the prominent grains.
time because they didn't discover pasta in good time.
They hadn't discovered pasta, yeah, like that. Like that. Because how you say, Marco Polo walked by too far north, you know? And the sages that he walked by up there, they weren't eating anyway. They were just living off of air, and so they didn't care about the new pasta. And the guys down in the mainland, then he's too far north, so yeah, they missed out. You know, Chinese are eating it, and then the Italians are eating it, but India missed out. Yeah. No? Okay. The BBD purport states, the great commentator Sridhar Swami has analyzed Shishupal's words as follows. The term Gopala means not only cowherd, but also protector of the Vedas and the earth. Right? Because the earth is also known as Go. Because the point is from the cow you get all the benefits for sacrifice. So also from the earth, and also then from the Veda. Right? So everything's just like the spiritual master is the father, the Veda is the mother, right? When it comes to the initiation, you know, so that way you're born into spiritual life. Yeah. Similarly, Kula Pamshana has a double meaning. Shishupal intended it to mean the disgrace of the family, which is its meaning when divided as above. But the word may be also analyzed as Kulapam, Amshana, giving a totally different meaning. Kulakam indicates those who prattle with crooked words contrary to the Vedas. And amshana, derived from the verb amshayati, means destroyer. In other words, he was praising Krishna as he who vanquishes all misguided and frivolous speeches about the nature of truth. Right? So he's the protector of the Veda. You know, then he's the destroyer of those who then speak improperly about the Veda. Similarly, although Shishupal wanted to compare Lord Krishna to a crow with the words yata kakaha, these words may also be divided as yata a kakaha. In that case, according to Srila Sridhar Swami, the word kaka is a combination of ka aka, which indicates material happiness and misery. Thus, Lord Krishna is a kaka. You know, or ka-aka, in the sense that he is beyond all material misery and happiness. Right? So he's above all these things. He's beyond. Right? Thus, Lord... Okay. He's beyond all this, being on the pure transcendental platform. Finally, Shishupal was saying, right in saying that Lord Krishna does not deserve merely the Purudasa rice cake. Right? The whole thing should be... It's all about him. Offering to the lesser demigods as the substitute for the heavenly beverage, soma. In fact, okay, so the higher ones get soma and the lower ones get the rice cake. Okay, so that must have been the difference, is the Ashwini Kumaras were getting rice cake and then Chavana said he'll arrange it that they'd get soma. In fact, Lord Krishna deserves to receive everything that we possess, since he is the ultimate proprietor of everything, including ourselves. So not the rice cake, not the soma, but everything that we have, including ourselves. Thus, we should give Lord Krishna our life and soul, not merely a ritualistic offering of rice cakes. Right? So, yeah, so see, that's the whole point, is that Bhagavatam takes everything to such another level. It's all just Krishna and the devotees interacting and all the wonderful things that they do. And so this kind of thing is that where the meanings become adjusted, like that, because it brings out the rasa and brings out the real thing of the relationship. So the double meanings in Sanskrit words, that you have that principle, is so that one group understands one thing and another group understands another. Right? So Krishna and the gopis are there, and you know everybody's there in the general assembly, and so something will be spoken. And so it means one thing to Mother Jashoda and everybody else, it means another thing to the gopis. Does that make sense? Yeah. So like that, then you do. Shishupal continued, how does one who follows no principles of the social and spiritual orders, or of family ethics, who has been excluded from all religious duties, who behaves whimsically and who has no good qualities, how does such a person deserve to be worshipped? Srila Prabhupada writes in Krishna Book, actually, Krishna does not belong to any caste. nor does he have to perform any occupational duty. It is stated in the Vedas that the Supreme Lord has nothing to do as his prescribed duty. Whatever has to be done on his behalf is executed by his different energies. Right, so that for he who follows no principles of the social and spiritual is excluded from all who behaves whimsically. It's all taken care of. He has no duty. So yes, it's true. You know, because he's transcendental. Shishupal indirectly praised Krishna by saying that he is not within the jurisdiction of Vedic injunction. This is true because he is the Supreme Personality of Godhead. That he has no qualities means that Krishna has no material qualities. And because he is the Supreme Personality of Godhead, he acts independently, not caring for conventions or social or religious principles. Shishupal continued, Yayati cursed the dynasty of these Yadavas, and ever since then they have been ostracized by honest men and addicted to liquor. How then does Krishna deserve to be worshipped? The BBT purport states, Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti gives the inner meaning of the words of Shishupal to show how he continued unintentionally glorifying Lord Krishna and his Yadu dynasty. Quote, even though the Yadus were cursed by Yayati, they have been relieved of this curse by great saints, and consequently of them, they have been raised to a position of royal sovereignty by such persons as Kartavirya. Thus they have become absorbed in Pana, protecting the earth. Considering all this, how does Krishna, the chief of the Yadus, deserve useless worship? Rather, he deserves opulent worship. Right? So he just takes everything and then... So addicted to liquor, so then here Pana is protecting the earth. Right? So therefore they are absorbed in Pana. Right? So instead of addicted to liquor, they're absorbed in protecting the earth. Shishupal continued, these Yadavas have abandoned the holy lands inhabited by saintly sages and have instead taken shelter of a fortress in the sea, a place where no Brahminical principles are observed. There, just like thieves, they harass their subjects. Verses 38 to 46, Shishupal attains the Lord. Sukadeva Goswami continued, bereft of all good fortune, so he can understand this all the years, that abandoning the holy lands, you know, so they've taken here is that they're beyond, they're transcendental. So it's not about the punya aspect, it's about the transcendental aspect. Bereft of all good fortune, Shishupal spoke these and other insults. But the Supreme Lord said nothing, just as a lion ignores a jackal's cry. Srila... yes. So I guess, maybe, yeah. Yeah. Srila Jiva Goswami explains, okay, I guess they're all changing. The Shishupalawas and Goswamo. So the Goswamo explains about the Shishupalawals. Okay. So Shishupal was more or less dead. Nashta Mangalaha. The phrase can also be taken as Anashta Mangalaha. He had some profound auspiciousness. He was actually an associate of the Lord, right? So that's the he was just playing this as a pastime to please the Lord, because they originally wanted to please Krishna. They're thinking, Krishna, you know, they're strong and they're gatekeepers, so then they'll think about these kind of things of the show of strength and arms and fighting and all these. And they were thinking that we will get this from the Lord, because he being the original personality, all qualities that may be experienced by his devotees are coming from him. So therefore, since we have this ability and nature to be able to fight and are expert in, that must come from the Lord. Then they were thinking, but here in Vaikuntha, who can he fight with? Right? There are no battles, there is no one strong like him that could give him a good fight. So they were thinking only we could give him a good fight. So they were thinking that, you know, maybe they can serve in this way. So then Krishna, noting this, then, you know, arranged for the pastime to unfold how it was so that they would get the opportunity to do this. Right? So that's the whole thing. So this way, then, it's being pointed out, Jiva Goswami is pointing out that it is that it is anashta mangala, that it is, you know, profound auspiciousness, not even just auspicious, but profound auspiciousness. He was now about to be reinstated in that position, right? So if someone goes back to Godhead, we consider that glorious. And it's not even you're going back and being trained. He's not going to Gokul, you know. He's going directly to Vaikuntha, right? Because they already are doing their service. They just came down here to take part in the Lord's pastimes, right? So very auspicious. In the seventh canto, Narada explains to Yudhishthira that his sins were destroyed by Krishna's chakra, Srimad Bhagavatam 7.146. His sin was destroyed, but he was not destroyed. The third canto describes Hiranyaksha's anger at the Lord, Srimad Bhagavatam 3.19.9. But it was explained that he did not have actual anger. His chastising the Lord, described in Srimad Bhagavatam 3.18.9, is only imitation anger. You know, it's just to create the good fight and create the mood and all that. The Lord acted in order to dispel the devata's fear of the demon's words. Though it is not mentioned, the Lord had no cause for anger, because he's the most powerful. What does it matter what they're saying and what they're doing? Therefore, the bad words of these two actually indicate another meaning. But to protect the pastime desired by the Lord, he made a show with words that have another meaning. Because otherwise, how will the pastime go on? It's just more offerings and all. They won't have that the flavors of the varieties of rasa and all that. So therefore, even though they're praising him, the words that they're using, because of their way they can have a second meaning, then that would be the standard meaning that how people would take it. So then it takes on that mood. Right? From the acharyas.
Yeah.
But it's also explained in the Shastra and things like that. But then the acharyas, they, you know, let it be known. Because they've gone through all the scriptures, so then they know. Because sometimes, let's say you have in Puranas, if something's been mentioned in one place, it won't be mentioned again. Right? Means your generic elements might be done because of the historical form that Puranas take, but a certain detail, if it's already been explained in one Purana, it doesn't need to be explained again, because the all 18 Puranas are discussed at Naimisharanya to the sages with Shaunaka Rishi as the head by Sutta Goswami. Now whether that Sutta means Ugrashava, who's speaking here, or his father Romaharshan, but the point is that Sutta Goswami spoke to the sages at Naimisharanya headed by Shaunaka Rishi. You know, and that question and answer between Sutta and Shaunaka is the basis of all 18 Puranas, right? And so, if a detail's been given in one Purana, it's already there. So that's why when it says that the Goswamis went through all the Vedic literature, it means that. And so then they pulled whatever is important, you know, that the Bhagavatam is there and everything that will support that from everything else, then that's brought into one place. So then, in that way, it's revealed.
We also try to see what is happening here, the relations, try to catch this kind of dynamic.
It's not means we see how the Lord is involved and how he's making arrangements so we can be more Krishna conscious. But it's not that conditioned souls doing funny things, we have to read into it something else. You know what I'm saying? The kids in the living room, you know, picks up a ball and throws it, you know, through the front window. Then we don't have to turn it into some great, you know, Uttamadikari revelation of, you know, what do you call it? Yeah, pastime, but what is it after the... wow, forgetting the words. You have the... oh, bhava, okay. Stai bhava, vibhava, anubhava. That is some kind of anubhava. We don't have to do that, no. We just have to see it that we're in the material world and things don't go very well. And so therefore, we surrender to Krishna like this. That's the only thing that's... That makes sense? So where the acharyas revealed this, then that's what we know, because it's specifically with Jai and Vijay that they're doing this. They're not doing this with all the other demons. Like that. You know, only sometimes then they'll bring it out. I think there were a few in the Vrindavan demons that they did that.
Hiranyakashipu, the shloka that he chants before attempting to kill Prahlad Maharaj.
Okay.
In that purport, Prabhupada writes, Vishnu Chakravarti quotes that he breaks down the shloka in that praise of Prahlad.
Okay, yeah. Yeah, but then we see it's those specifically these two persons. Like that. So it's not a generic. It's not that the rickshaw wala came and ran over your foot and it was done out of pure devotion and all that. And yeah. You don't have to do that. You see Krishna in everything. But you don't have to do this. What the acharyas revealed, that we take that. We don't try to do that. Like that. So, yeah.
This particular combination of anarthas in this Shishupal, internally he's a complete demon, he's set to blaspheme the Lord. Before blaspheming, he's glorifying the Brahmanas, maybe the Vaishnavas, there are three of our acharyas, Brahma, Vyas and Narada are there.
Right.
And then he moves to attack the Lord like this.
Yeah.
So Maharaj, how is this possible that at one place he has this culture of glorifying the Brahman and then complete envy to the Lord? How
okay.
is this common?
Now, it's about how do you make the basis of culture. Right, so we're taking that someone to be a demon can't be nice in any area, right? Because if we take the modern context of this, then what are the social norms that we say that this is a proper person and this is a bad person? Where do those norms come from? Right? The society itself creates them. Some may go back historically, some are new, so, like this. Right? So now, it's either you're following those or not. But what's the point of those? It's supposed to be that it will give the best benefit for the society. But the point is it's not necessarily working like that. Right? And so it's just what you, in your modes, then are comfortable with. So it's a vipassana ignorance. And then, there's always some mix of goodness in the mix of the modes. Like that, right? Yeah. So now in the Vedic system, it's not based on the pranamoy, as we just mentioned, the modern is. It's based on dharma. Now, with dharma, now you can do different things with it. But dharma is the common value or activity for all members of the Vedic society. I mean all. Now, whether you use the Dharma to get Artha and Kama, or you use Dharma to get Moksha, or you use Dharma in service of the Lord as Bhakti, that's what makes the difference. But the cultural thing is the same. So, therefore, you can be highly religious, but be simply interested in the results of karma, right? Now, and you're interested in the results of karma without seeing God related to it. So that's what makes someone a demon. It's not that they perform what's socially acceptable or not. It's that the culture is one thing. It's now what's your motive behind it. And if it's for dharma, artha, kama, and moksha, and you're accepting the supremacy of the Lord and it's His laws, that makes one as the demigod. But one doesn't accept His position that's important, maybe accept He's there, but they're not so worried about it, then that will make the demon. So even Shishupal here, it doesn't mean that they don't accept worship of Vishnu. They just don't like what's beyond Vishnu, is Krishna. Because Vishnu, okay, he's God, he follows the rules, he does everything perfect, he doesn't do anything that he shouldn't be doing. Right? Like that. So it's not a problem to have that. It's because of this modern concept that the social rules that the majority of people create that following of that or not makes you a good guy or not. While the Vedic is, you follow the Vedic rules because this is just what works. You know, that would be like saying, okay, I have two people. I have two houses next to each other. I have the local pastor living in this house, and I have the local total debauchee in this house. Right? And, you know, the debauchee guy, he's professional, he does his job, he has his money, you know, he does that, but he just, all he does is party and, you know, it's not good. Now, they both have a toaster. And they both happen to have the same toaster. And they both deal properly with their toaster. And they get the settings right, they do things right, they keep it clean, they keep it, you know, shiny, they don't let things drip inside, you know, does that make sense? You know, they don't put, you know, butter and jam on the piece of bread, then put it in the toaster. They don't do that kind of stuff, right? So now, that's the whole thing, is now, how can you call this guy good and this guy bad when they both use the toaster properly? So you should say they're both good. But the point is what is, the one guy is toast, you know, he's making the toast for his family and then they're going to go off to church, while the other guy's making it for whether girls are left over from last night because they were too drunk to leave. Right? So, you know, there's a difference. So that's the point, is that the Vedic is what actually works. So those who oppose the Vedic version, they're actually materially foolish. Because anything else they try is not working. Because if the modern work, using it from the mid-90s to now, we should be, you know, one of the most richest, most influential, well-appreciated societies in the world. But actually, we were more before when it was, you know, supposedly not so nice. You know what I'm saying? So the point is it doesn't work. But you follow the Vedic stuff, the people who have some, even some semblance left of it, they go into the modern environment and they do fabulous. You know what I'm saying? They're there in America. They're making tons of money. And they get up in the morning and go in and offer respects to their parents and do all these different things and all this stuff that we say is not important. And they make tons of money. Well, we say, oh, and all this, and, you know, about authority and what if, and, you know, maybe, and all this kind of stuff. And we don't do any of this, and we don't have any money either. So the point is these demons are demons because they don't accept the Lord and because it's all about sense gratification. Even the Lord's there, it doesn't matter because the sense gratification is the goal. So even if they accept him, he's only part of karma. He's not the supreme worshipable, so therefore we see like Shishupal. So he doesn't mind the Brahmins and all, like Jarasandha, he worships Shaligram, he worships Vishnu. But Krishna, forget it. So that's the whole point, is the Vedic system, there's one culture, everyone follows it, therefore there's a consistency, it's prosperous, it works. Now it's just a matter of what's your interest? Are you interested in going back to Godhead, getting liberation, or material enjoyment? Does that make sense? So that's the whole thing. So it's a very different approach. So they can accommodate. While you take this non-Vedic, is that someone's bad, they're bad in everything. You know, like propaganda, you know, they're just bad in everything. You know, they're going to go and do this to you and that to you and like this. But that's not what's happening. Does that make sense? You know. Yeah. The negative meaning is taken for the words of other demons, however, who are not associated with the Lord because of their demoniac nature. Right? So when they say the words, we take it in the negative because they're not devotees. But Jai and Vijay are devotees, so therefore they say words that sound like how the demons would speak, but actually they're praises of the Lord. So great personalities like the Acharyas, they can catch that. Right? Does that make sense? Yeah, so right? But the actual positive meaning was created by Saraswati, not by their intention. Externally, Shishupal spoke inauspicious words, abhadrani, but the other meaning is he spoke words of which nothing could be more auspicious. The Lord did not speak, Externally, he acted as a great person, like a lion ignoring a jackal. Yeah, so even if you, but in the Vrindavan pastimes, there's some demon is speaking or something, and I remember the acharyas are doing that and switching the words. But then it says here, they say, the actual posami was created by Saraswati, not by their intention, means not by those demons. Yes. So she, when they would speak, she would put words into the mouth that to them meant these, but it actually had the other meaning. Yes. You know what I'm saying? But with Jai and Vijay, then, you know, they point out their associates, but you don't push that too much, otherwise you don't appreciate the pastime.
The same thing happened in Rukmini, and Rukmini was insulting Krishna.
Rukmini. Okay, so then that was the other one we were thinking of. Yeah. So Saraswati then speaks. The real meaning is that the Lord was silent because of his profound nature. Similarly, Narasimha is praised by the Shiva.
What is Narasimha?
Okay. Narasimhadeva is praised by the Shiva? Narasimhadeva is praised by Yeshiva. Okay, so, you know, so that's what they study in the, what do you call it? Okay, what is it? Ariel, right? Okay. Sukadeva Goswami continued, upon hearing such intolerable blasphemy of the Lord, several members of the assembly covered their ears and walked out, angrily cursing the king of Chedi. Anyone who fails to immediately leave the place where he hears criticism of the Supreme Lord or his faithful devotee will certainly fall down, bereft of his pious credit. Then the sons of Pandu became furious, and together with the warriors of the Matsya, Kaikeya, and Srinjaya clans, they rose up from their seats with weapons poised, ready to kill Shishupal. Undaunted, Shishupal then took up his sword and shield in the midst of all the assembled kings, O Bharata, and hurled insults at those who sided with Lord Krishna. So nobody was spared. At that point, the Supreme Lord stood up and checked his devotees. He then angrily sent forth his razor-sharp disc and severed the head of his enemy as he was attacking. Right, so they were going to, and he said, no, I'll take care of it. And then he killed them. Srila Prabhupada writes in Krishna book, all the kings present belonging to the Kuru dynasty, Matsya dynasty, Kekaya dynasty, and Srinjaya dynasty were very angry and immediately took up their swords and shields to kill Shishupal, who was so foolish that he was not even slightly agitated, although all the kings present were ready to kill him. Shishupal did not care to think of the pros and cons of his foolish talking, and instead of stopping when he saw that all the kings were ready to kill him, he stood to fight with them and took up his sword and shield. When Lord Krishna saw that they were going to fight in the arena of the auspicious Rajasuya Yajna, he personally pacified them. Out of his causeless mercy, he himself decided to kill Shishupal. Because otherwise, then there'll be so much difficulty and bloodshed. You know, it makes a mess of the whole assembly. So he'll do it. When Shishupal was abusing the kings who were about to attack him, Lord Krishna took up his disc, as sharp as the blade of a razor, and immediately separated Shishupal's head from his body. Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur comments, then the Lord stood up. This was his intention. If I remain silent, then they will fight amongst each other and fill the sacrificial arena with blood. Even if I mount my chariot and with troops engage in combat with him, the place will be soaked with blood. Either way, the sacrifice of my dear most Yudhishthira will be destroyed. Reconciliation at this point is too difficult. Right? So you can't have a war, but reconciliation won't work either. Right? Therefore, this must be done. Deciding this, he at that moment rose and cut off Shishupal's head in such a way that even a drop of blood did not fall on the sacrificial arena. So, you know, Sudarshan is just so expert. So he cut off his head and no blood was there, right? So it's not that Danda was there, but not his war. Danda was there just a singular killing of him, chastising of a Shishupal. Sukadeva Goswami continued, when Shishupal was thus killed, a great roar and howl went up from the crowd. Taking advantage of that disturbance, the few kings who were supporters of Shishupal quickly left the assembly out of fear for their lives. Right, because everybody was, you know, seeing this, then they all snuck out the back, right? An effulgent light rose from Shishupal's body, and as everyone watched, entered Lord Krishna just like a meteor falling from the sky to the earth. So it means it was quite bright that they could see nicely. You know, just as the meteor just goes to the earth, so then, you know, the soul went to Krishna. Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur comments, the spiritual body being eternal in the form of light, like a comet falling from the sky, Shishupal rose up to Vaikuntha. He therefore merged into Krishna, within whom the Lord of Vaikuntha had merged. He remained inside Krishna at the side of his Lord of Vaikuntha. Right? So in this way, he merged into the Lord, but because all the avatars are within the avatari, Krishna, therefore, then where Vishnu is, he went and sat with Vishnu. At the end of Krishna's earthly pastimes at Prabhashetra, he would go to Vaikuntha along with his Lord, the master of Vaikuntha. So when Krishna left, then all the avatars went back to their places. The popular view, however, is that Shishupal attained Sayuja with Krishna at the Rajasuya sacrifice. Right, that's the popular view, because it works, because demons do that, so it doesn't. It's not that. But at the same time, we see is that being an associate, he merged into Krishna's body, but also Vishnu was there, and then he was with Vishnu. So he wasn't, in that way, it wasn't Sayuja. He just went back to his place in Vaikuntha. Sukadev Goswami continued, obsessed with hatred of Lord Krishna throughout three lifetimes, Shishupal attained the Lord's transcendental nature. Right, because he's so absorbed in Krishna that at the time of death, being absorbed in Krishna, he attains the same that transcendental nature. Indeed, one's consciousness determines one's future birth. The BBT's purport states, Shishupal and his friend Dantavakra, who would be killed by Krishna in chapter 78, were previously Jai and Vijay, two gatekeepers in Vaikuntha. Because of an offense, the four Kumaras cursed them to take three births in the material world as demons. The first birth was as Hiranyaksha and Hiranyakashipu, the second as Ravana and Kumbhakarna, and the third as Shishupal and Dantavakra. In each birth, they were completely absorbed in enmity towards the Lord and were slain by him. Srila Prabhupada explains the position of Shishupal as follows. Although Shishupal acted as the enemy of Krishna, he was not for a single moment out of Krishna consciousness. He was always absorbed in thoughts of Krishna, and thus he got first the salvation of Sayuja Mukti, merging the existence of the Supreme, and finally became reinstated in his original position of personal service. The Bhagavad Gita corroborates the fact that one who is absorbed in the thought of the Supreme Lord at the time of death immediately enters the kingdom of God after quitting his material body. Right? So for him, since Vishnu was then merged into Krishna, therefore then he went and merged into Krishna, so therefore that aspect of the Sayuja, right, because there, but then when Krishna wraps up his pastimes, then Vaikunthapati, going back to his position of Vaikuntha, then he'll go with him, right? Does that make sense? So we can see there's no contradiction between all the different things that the Acharyas are saying, it's just which aspect they're bringing out. The third and seventh cantos of the Srimad Bhagavatam elaborately describe the incident wherein the Lord's personal associates were cursed to come to the material world as his enemies. In this connection, Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti quotes the following verse, Srimad Bhagavatam 7.1.47. Vairanu bandha tivrena jya yena chuta satmatam nitao punar harehi parshvam Jagmatur Vishnu Parshadau. These two associates of Lord Vishnu, Jai and Vijay, maintained a feeling of enmity for a very long time. Because of always thinking of Krishna in this way, they regained the shelter of the Lord, having returned home back to Godhead. And so they were always Krishna conscious. Just they were taking on that flavor of being an enemy of the Lord, so that then the Lord can enjoy pastimes of fighting. So, like that. Om Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare,
Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare.
Jai Srila Prabhupada ki, Samaveta Bhaktivinoda ki, Jai Nitai Gaura Premanandini.